So we're going to change gears now. Philip Roberts is going to come up and talk about thrips control in the southeast.
Thank you, Gus, and good morning. And great to have the opportunity to visit with you on behalf of the entomologists in the southeast. As you'll see on the slide, there are several folks who've contributed to this presentation. One of the things I do want to mention is Cotton Incorporated has funded the Southeast Entomologist on a regional project for the last several years. So much of what I present today are a result of projects funded by Cotton Incorporated. I also mentioned that we are in preparation. We are preparing a printed version of results concerning management of thrips in the southeast, so that'll be available here in the coming months. Thrips are a very common pest, our most predictable pest across the southeast. Basically, 100% of our acreage is infested each year. We do have a complex of species, tobacco thrips being by far the most common. However, we do sometimes see western flower thrips, particularly in the northern fringes of the southeast, as well as some other species. But again, tobacco thrips is typically 90-95% of what we're dealing with. I think we're all familiar with thrips injury, familiar with the leaf curling, delays in maturity, reduced yield potential, etc. Now, one of the things I do want to mention is for years, we've always recommended a preventive treatment at planting. And here on the bottom, I just pulled together a little bit of Georgia data, but in 26 trials over the last 14 years, we've seen a yield response to treating thrips at planting of 237 pounds. Very consistent. 24 of 26 of those trials we saw a yield increase. So preventive treatments are a good option for us. Now in recent years, the question I most commonly receive are seed treatments still working? And I think my colleagues across the southeast and probably across the belt received this treatment or question. Now, this is just a picture of a plot we had in 2015. On the right-hand side of the screen, you see a seed treatment. On the left-hand side of the screen, you see a fungicide only or a truly untreated plot. Now, one of the things on the farm that we don't see in today's production environment as we've moved to seed treatments is our growers and us as consultants and extension workers, we don't see true untreated cotton on the farm. We see seed treatments struggle. They struggled in this trial, but again, you can still see they're providing some level of control. We used to stop up Timic tubes, right? Growers always were reminded how severe thrips could be. But at least in Georgia and most areas of the southeast, we're still seeing activity from these seed treatments. That doesn't mean it's perfect, but there is still value and activity there. Now, Dr. Angus Catshot will talk about thrips management in the Mid-South following me, but back in 2011, I think, was the initial report where they had reports of extensive damage from thrips behind these seed treatments. We more recently in the past couple years have begun to see this. Now in response to some of these reports, there's been a number of susceptibility bioassays conducted by various people, whether it be Syngenta, George Kennedy up at North Carolina State, I think Fred Musser at Mississippi State. But speaking just for the southeast, I can tell you we do have a range of susceptibility to the neonicotinoid insecticides, these seed treatments in the southeast. Now, when we think about these differences in susceptibility, you know, how do we really recognize this? Sometimes this is confounded in the field, because we are making these oversprays. We're covering up some of these differences we may be seeing in the field. Here's a slide that George Kennedy provided just showing just representing the differences in susceptibility of tobacco thrips across the southeast as well as the mid-south. The larger the bubble or dot you see on the screen, the greater survivorship in this bioassay or the less susceptible. But what you see is there tends to be some variability across the southeast, but something is changing. Something has changed. There's no question about that. So we in the southeast, I think we've come to the conclusion that we really just can't rely on an at-plant treatment for thrips control. I don't think there's any question we have to look at a management program, more of an IPM approach to thrips management, because thrips are just going to be an annual guaranteed pest, yield-limiting pest in the southeast. So we're going to share with you some information in terms of an IPM program when you're looking at thrips management. First one, we'll talk about tillage. And again, each of these slides I'm talking about are objectives within this regional project, and most of the objectives were conducted in across the southeast. But I think most of us already know that tillage or residue on the soil surface has a tremendous impact on thrips. We very routinely see a 50% reduction in thrips where we have a previous cover, a winter cover crop. We strip till or roll that cover crop and plant into it. We very routinely see a reduction in thrips populations. Now, another point that when you think about thrips management, one of the most important attributes we can have in a production system in terms of tolerating thrips or managing thrips is a rapidly growing season. Okay, we all know that. When we have situations where plants are not growing rapidly, that's when thrips can really punish us in terms of yield potential. So as part of this project, we tried to manipulate vigor with use of a starter fertilizer. Okay, and we did this in multiple locations in multiple states. Now, the benefits of a starter fertilizer can obviously result in increased vigor, especially if we have cool conditions, perhaps wet conditions. But the greater vigor we have, the better we can tolerate feeding, the better that seedling can escape this window of susceptibility. Now, the chart on the right illustrates plant biomass at 42 days after planting. Basically, we clipped the plants at the soil surface and weighed them. We had irrigated and dry land environments. You can see we had significantly larger plants where we used starter fertilizer. And at least in theory, we can say that that should help us tolerate or escape these thrips in a quicker manner. Now, as part of this project, we also looked at the optimal timing of a foliar insecticide spray. Okay? We basically compared supplemental foliar sprays on seed treatments at the one-leaf stage compared to the two-leaf stage. Again, we did this in dryland and irrigated environments. But what we determined was the early spray was much better than the two-leaf spray. So the one-leaf stage, at least in our trials across the southeast, was clearly the optimal time for a supplemental thrip spray. And again, I'm just illustrating the biomass there on the right. This is a very good measure of performance of a thrips management program. You know, a lot of things can happen before the end of the year, but we really like to use this biomass or the size of plants at about 42 days after planting. But you can see there's a very consistent trend that our greatest biomass occurred when we made a one-leaf spray versus a two-leaf spray or nothing. As far as control of thrips with foliar insecticides, there are a lot of options, or not a lot of options, but several options. Across most of the southeast, orthene or acephate is our standard. Biodrin also has some activity there, and then we've got Radiant showing good activity. We in Georgia, this is Georgia data, we cannot control thrips with pyrethroids. I've heard in other states that sometimes they can, but in Georgia that just doesn't happen. For some reason, when we spray a pyrethroid on thrips, we tend to have more thrips than where we do nothing, which is kind of interesting to me. The other thing I'll mention, and when we talk about stress and the importance of having a rapidly growing seedling, We use starter fertilizer to try to enhance growth and vigor, but we also conducted trials where we tried to create stress. And basically, we did that with excessive rates of herbicides. Now, in this particular trials, or set of trials, we used either no pre-emergent herbicide, our standard rate of pre-emergent herbicide, or we created stress with a double X of herbicide. And in each of those herbicide regimes, we either had untreated cotton, a seed treatment, or a seed treatment plus a one-leaf spray, as you see illustrated. Now, what these bars represent are damage ratings on a scale of 1 to 5. Anything greater than a 3, where you see the dotted line, is unacceptable. 2 points to make here. Number one, as we increased our level of management for thrips control, damage ratings are reduced. The blue bars are untreated. Seed treatments are the red bars. Damage ratings are getting lower as we increase management. We would expect that. But the other trend I want you to see is as stress from the herbicide, and it could be stress from anything. We just used herbicides to create stress. It could be cool temperatures. It could be any other factors that created stress, in our opinion. But the damage ratings tend to be higher where you had stress. Same number of thrips, but just the impact on the plant is greater. So if you look at the bars on the far right where we created stress from the herbicide, those damage ratings are much higher than where we had very little stress when we used no pre or just the recommended rate of a pre. This is the yield data. Same trend follows. You know, the comparisons I really like to make when we look at yield data here is how much value the foliar spray brought to the seed treatment. So let's compare the green bars to the red bars. The green bars is where we had a foliar spray in addition to the seed treatment. The red bars are the seed treatment alone. But as you move to the right and you see more stress, the value of that ornithine spray is much greater. You see that? It's over 200 pounds from a one-leaf ornithine spray where we had the added stress of the excessive rates herbicide. Whereas where we had very little stress, still a tendency to increase yield, but not near the magnitude. We also looked at a lot of new treatments, current treatments, potential treatments. This is just a listing of how these products tended to perform. Just in a nutshell, across the Southeast, in-furrow applications tend to look better than our current seed treatments. If we use an in-furrow with the seed treatment, that's probably a more Cadillac approach, or a seed treatment with a foliar spray. If we can get two levels of control on there, we tend to be superior to the seed treatment alone. I want to finish up real quick and introduce this concept of risk. When we think of thrips and how those populations vary each year, we across the Cotton Belt, I think, really understand the importance of planting date, for example, on thrips populations. But what I'm showing here is just the yield response to a neonic seed treatment in either a low-risk environment or a high-risk environment. What I mean by a high-risk environment would be a conventional tillage field planted early in our planting window prior to May 10th. A low-risk environment would be planted later or when we use reduced tillage. But we tend to see much more yield response when we have more thrips. But we can look at just two very simple risk indicators such as tillage and planting date, and really predict what thrips we expect to have. Now, one of the things we've done in the Southeast is we've got a little more detailed, and actually George Kennedy's lab at NC State is working on a predictive model for thrips injury in cotton in the Southeast. So he's got mountains of data from years past. We're in the process of validating that, so hopefully here in the very near future, we will have a predictive risk indicator that will help us make better decisions. With that, we'd like to thank Cotton Incorporated for funding this project, and that's what I have.